All right, so you know how when you first start diving into corporate law,
Yeah.
you kind of keep bumping into the same big cases over and over?
Yeah, absolutely. Those foundational cases that everyone just seems to know.
Right, exactly. Well, today we're tackling one of those Seed & Co. v. Technicolor. It's this Delaware case that's had a huge impact on a bunch of different areas. Like when you think about appraisal rights and how shareholders get paid out in mergers,
Yeah.
this is one of the big ones. And it also really shapes how we think about what a director is supposed to do, their responsibilities and the standards for when companies decide to merge.
For sure. It's a classic example of Delaware's influence on corporate governance,
It
too.
really is. So Technicolor is a cornerstone for figuring out when directors might be in legal hot water and how courts figure out how much a company is actually worth during a merger.
Yeah, and what's really interesting about it is how it hits on so many of the big ideas in corporate law, all the things that, as law students, you'll be wrestling with throughout your careers.
Totally.
It's not just some niche ruling. It's like right at this intersection of valuation, director conduct, and the legal principles that hold those directors accountable.
Yeah.
Super complex stuff.
Okay, so picture this. It's the early 1980s,
Yeah.
and Technicolor, the name everyone knows for film processing,
Yeah.
they're facing some tough times.
Well, right. And if you look at the bigger economic picture, the early 80s were just crazy for mergers and
Oh,
acquisition.
for sure.
There were all these corporate raiders going after companies like Technicolor, seeing them as maybe undervalued or ripe for restructuring.
Right.
And knowing that context is huge for understanding how the Technicolor deal went down.
Totally. So 1982, in comes MAF Group, run by this pretty well-known financier, Ronald Perelman. And they launched this two-step takeover. First, they make a tender offer. Basically, they put out a public invitation to shareholders. Hey, sell us your stock at $23 a share. And they managed to get a controlling interest that way. Then, at the start of 83, they finish it off with a cash-out merger, grabbing all the rest of the shares at that same $23 price.
And that's where our dissenting shareholder, Cinerama, comes in. They own like 4.4% of Technicolor stock, and they weren't happy with that $23 offer. So they decided to dissent from the merger. And that triggers their right to an appraisal. Basically, they go to the Delaware Court of Chancery and say, hey, you guys figure out what our shares are actually worth. But that's not all they did, right?
No way. Cinerama also went after Technicolor's directors,
Right.
claiming they'd totally failed in their, fiduciary duties, those legal and ethical obligations to act in the best interests of the company and all its shareholders.
Yeah.
And by approving the merger, Cinerama said they broke those duties. So now we have this legal battle on two fronts.
And this brings up a super important question for anyone looking at corporate litigation. What's the connection between these two types of claims?
Right.
Does a shareholder have to pick just one, going for a fair valuation with the appraisal or saying the directors messed up?
Yeah.
Or can they go after both at the same time?
Well, get ready, because the way this case went through the courts is pretty wild.
It's a long one.
So in 83, Cinerama initially filed for appraisal. Then, a few years later, in 86, they tacked on those breach of fiduciary duty claims. The Chancery Court at first said they had to pick just one path.
Right.
But then the Delaware Supreme Court comes in and overturns that decision, and they say, nope. Shareholders can actually go after both appraisal and those duty claims at the same time. So then we have years of trials and appeals, and the case keeps bouncing back and forth between the Chancery Court and the Supreme Court. And in the end, let's just say the directors didn't exactly get a gold star for their conduct.
Well, the fact that this case went all the way up to the Delaware Supreme Court, not just once, but multiple times, I mean, that really tells you how fundamental the legal issues were
Oh, yeah.
and how tough it was to sort them out. It wasn't like they could just apply some easy existing legal precedent. They had to really dig into Delaware corporate law and clarify things.
Totally. And at the heart of it all were three really big questions that are still super relevant for lawyers and students working in corporate law today. First, about those appraisal rights. When we're figuring out the fair value of shares in a merger, should we factor in whatever plans the acquiring company has for the target after the merger is done?
Right.
Second, those fiduciary duties. Did the Technicolor directors actually do what they were supposed to when they said yes to this merger,
Yeah.
or did they totally drop the ball?
Yeah.
And third, what's the right legal standard to judge their actions? Should we give them the benefit of the doubt with the business judgment rule, or do we need to look at their conduct way more closely with the entire fairness standard?
And those three questions, those are the core of Technicolor.
Yeah.
they give you a framework for understanding why this case is still so important in corporate law.
Okay, so let's dive into that first biggie, appraisal rights, and how to figure out what shares are worth. The Delaware Supreme Court made this pretty famous statement. They said, hey, post-merger plans can actually matter when we're valuing those dissenting shares. Hmm. What was the thinking behind that?
Well, the big thing here is the idea of fair value. Delaware law says that shareholders who dissent, they have a right to get the fair value for their shares on the date of the merger, taking into account that the company is a going concern. And the Supreme Court said, look, this going concern valuation, it doesn't just stop at what the company was doing before the merger agreement. Like, if the buyer had some solid, clear plans in place already when the merger happened, maybe a restructuring plan, for example, and those plans would for sure impact the company's value, yeah, then those things should absolutely be part of the appraisal. And that was a big shift from what the Chancery Court had initially said, where they were mostly focused on what the target company was worth on its own before the merger.
So it wasn't just about like the price someone was willing to pay right then and there, but more about the actual value of the company.
Right.
Which could be even higher because of the buyer's plans, as long as those plans were, you know, actually solid and ready to go.
Exactly. The court recognized that a merger doesn't mean the company just disappears. It changes. And if you ignore real, actionable plans that are going to affect the company's value, well, then you're not being realistic about what's happening financially. The key thing, though, is non-speculative. It can't just be some vague idea. It has to be a real plan that's likely to actually happen.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's move on to those fiduciary duties. Mm-hmm. How did the Technicolor directors supposedly fail in their responsibilities?
Well, this is where things get really interesting. The court basically said that the way the directors made their decision, it was seriously flawed. Two directors in particular, Sullivan and Kammerman, they were deeply involved in those negotiations with Perelman's MAF group. Hmm. But they basically kept the rest of the Technicolor board in the dark until like the very last minute. So when the full board finally got together to vote on the merger agreement, they were presented with a deal that was, you know, basically already done.
And the other directors just went along with it without really digging in. That sounds almost careless.
Well, that was a major point for the court. The board, they relied heavily on this fairness opinion from Goldman Sachs.
Okay.
But what the court found was that this opinion, it was based on incomplete, maybe even misleading information. It turns out Goldman Sachs didn't get to see all the important data, and kind of shockingly, Kammerman himself had actually limited what they could look at. So because of all that, the court concluded that relying on this messed up fairness opinion, plus not doing their own due diligence, not really investigating the deal, you know,
right,
that added up to gross negligence. They breached their duty of care.
Gross negligence, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
For those who maybe haven't heard that term before, what does it actually mean when we're talking about directors' duties?
So, with director duties, gross negligence is more than just a bad call or a mistake. It means you've completely disregarded your obligation to be diligent, careful, and make informed decisions. The Delaware court was basically saying that the Technicolor directors totally failed to get all the reasonably available information before making this huge decision about the company's future. They didn't ask the tough questions. They didn't demand the data they needed to really assess things. They just like rubber stamped the agreement they were given.
So what happens when you get a finding of gross negligence like that? What does it mean for how the court looks at the merger? I remember we talked about the business judgment rule before.
Right. The business judgment rule is super important in corporate law. Think of it like a shield that protects directors when they make good faith decisions. You know, decisions they honestly believe are in the best interest of the company. Even if those decisions don't work out well, courts usually won't second guess them because of this rule. But, and this is key, that protection, it can be taken away. And one way to do that is to show that the directors didn't do their duty of care. And like we said, gross negligence means they didn't do their duty.
So because the Technicolor directors were found grossly negligent, they lost the protection of that business judgment rule.
Yeah, exactly. And once that happens, things flip. Now, it's not the shareholders who have to prove the directors did something wrong. It's the directors who have to prove that the deal was totally fair to the shareholders. That's a much higher bar. They have to show that the way they negotiated and approved the merger was fair, and the price the shareholders got was fair. And in Technicolor, the court was super critical of how badly the directors messed up the process, especially relying on that weak fairness opinion and not doing their own due diligence.
What about the duty of loyalty? Was there any sign that the directors might have violated that too?
Yeah, the court was definitely worried about what Sullivan was doing. There were some hints that he might have had personal interests that pushed him to support the deal, although they didn't really nail down the specifics at that point. So the Supreme Court sent the case back to the Chancery Court, partly to look into those potential conflicts of interest and figure out Sullivan's real motives. What's important to remember is that even if just one director has a conflict of interest, it can screw up the whole decision-making process and trigger that tougher entire fairness review. But Delaware courts are really thorough and fact-specific when they look at duty of loyalty claims.
So zooming out a bit, what are the big lessons law students should really take away from all this Technicolor drama?
There are three big ones that really stand out. First, when it comes to figuring out the value of shares in an appraisal, especially when shareholders are against a merger, the court will absolutely look at any concrete, non-speculative plans the acquiring company had in place on the day the merger went through. Remember, going concern value isn't just about how the target company was doing before the deal. Second, and this is huge for anyone thinking about being on a corporate board, courts expect you to be active, informed, and diligent. You can't just rubber stamp a merger agreement without doing your homework, asking the hard questions, getting all the info you need, and really thinking it through. If you don't do that, you could be found grossly negligent and be personally liable. That business judgment rule protection, it's gone if you haven't actually used good judgment.
And what's the third key takeaway?
Third, and this is really important for lawyers who might be advising shareholders involved in mergers. If your clients don't agree with a merger and want an appraisal to get the fair value for their shares, they don't have to choose just that one option. They can also go after the company's directors for breaking their fiduciary duties in that same merger. Technicolor made that crystal clear. Dissenting shareholders have both of those options.
So for all the future corporate lawyers and directors out there, what's the big message, the cautionary tale from Seed & Covey Technicolor?
For future directors, being on a board is about more than just showing up to meetings. You have a big responsibility to be part of the decision making, to ask tough questions, and to get all the information you need to make informed choices, especially with something as big as a merger. Being passive and just going along with things can have serious legal consequences. And for future lawyers, you've got to really examine every part of the merger process. Look for any signs that the directors might not have done their due diligence or might have broken their duties. This case shows us that Delaware courts are serious about holding directors accountable when they don't do what they're supposed to. They won't put up with directors who are basically asleep at the wheel.
A lot to think about for anyone interested in the ins and outs of corporate law. Think about how this case might affect how a board approaches a potential acquisition in today's world. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
It was my pleasure.
And that's it for today.